Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello, hello.
And Jules Gill.
Hey, guys.
Returning from his gallivanting trip around the United Kingdom.
Where I explored the great, wet, wild vastness of my partner's living room because we were just replastering. Yeah. How fun was that?
So good.
I'm 30 years old and this is how I spend my weekends now.
I'm glad you brought that back around. So we were trying to think of sort of general conversations in the industry going on at the minute. Mm-hmm. And Jules said, why don't we just talk about general sort of corporate greed and PR? Because it's a nice, lovely topic. I mean, you tackled it last week.
Well, the thing is that I used to work in marketing and PR before this, so I know all of the tricks and trades. And to be honest, most people are quite savvy to how, you know, even down to like where your food is placed on the shelves when you go into marketing, how it all like into that psychological warfare that tries to get money out of your wallet. Mm-hmm. But the video games, they are quite abrasive with that, aren't they? Because obviously we were talking about a few things to do with games that are releasing special editions. Mm-hmm. Like Larry Bundy Jr. literally messaged me about 12 minutes before we started this saying, who the hell is going to buy a steelbook version of the Anthem game? It has no game in it. It's £20 just for the steelbook.
What?
And that... EA are putting it on for pre-order now.
What? Okay, wait a minute.
So that I'm just saying.
That happened before. There was something where you could buy the steelbook of a game without the game itself, just for the sake of buying it for a shelf.
I understand it if you get it for like a pre-order, as in like Soul Calibur 6 or 5, for example, released it, that you got a nice steelbook one if you pre-ordered
it
through there.
Not Collector's Edition, but the edition that I got came with the steelbook, but that was because it's the thing that the actual thing that holds the disc. It's not because it's a random thing.
But you won't go out of your way and buy it for £20.
No.
I mean,
no.
The game costs you £60. Why are you going to up it to £80 to be like, oh, well, I
think about costing a steelbook as well. It's not going to cost more than £5 for them.
And you can't
assume it's not. Yeah.
And it ain't going to affect your resale value. Oh. If you then go into, say, like Game or CEX or whatever your trading platform is there and go like, oh, could we do this? They'd be like, well, I'm give you £3 more for it.
I think what happens in EA at the boardroom level, they must have a guy who's absolutely obsessed with money, loves money, and we all love money. Who doesn't love money? But he absolutely loves money. And then every now and then, whenever he makes a really bad decision, someone just gets his hand and goes, no.
Yeah.
And then this whole Anthem thing, he's gone, how about I make a steelbook that costs £20 and it doesn't come with the game, and no one's been there.
Someone shook that hand.
What I love is that I always think of companies like EA or like the greedy sort of like corporate ones as being, they're run by a person who has no idea what they're doing, but it's one of those like they've got electrodes strapped to their brain, and it's like every time they make the wrong decision, it's just kind of like, ah, and they're just like, but if I press this one, I don't get shot. A big button that just says make money, and his signature just gets put onto all of the bad decisions. So when
EA himself.
Yeah, when the doors get kicked down, he'll be the first in the firing line. Sort of thing.
Part of me thinks that it is like this weird little corporate think tank that think of the most money hungry practices at the top, because we like to sort of cartoonify them or assume that they're the suits at the top kind of
Mr.
thing.
EA.
Mr. EA. And it's there will be a financial reality to that. Obviously, there are going to be people looking at the facts and figures kind of thing. But one of the things that you mentioned before we started recording is, well, I started to think of based on the idea of tackling this stuff, is like, we're kind of okay with the industry playing us, and we have been. Mm. If you think back on the longest time we've been gaming, like you can nearly always associate a leading advert or a thing that was revealed as gameplay, even though it wasn't, or like a hyped up feature that wasn't even in the game or whatever. So one of my opening things was, I was going to ask you guys, do you remember the earliest time the industry lied to you?
Ooh.
Like the earliest time you bought into something that was just straight up a bull poop?
I've
got a big one, but yeah.
Yeah. But you want to go first?
I'm just going to say.
I am the younger. I'm literally a pube compared to both of you. So you should probably go first.
7 years older than
speak to the fossils.
Yeah.
So back in the day, wheel had just been invented, and then along came these.
Are you seeing that loaf of bread, mate?
Yeah, I know.
You slice it and everything.
But then I'd left outside and got a bit wet. So we're not going to go into that.
You have no draft, mate.
Anyway, so there was. the SNES came out, Sega came out, having their little battle of the titans back then in the 80s and 90s, and then you just think to yourself, I've just been lied to so much because the talk about the sort of, what was the chip that everyone was talking about that
the
it had.
PS2?
No. The SNES and versus the Mega Drive. Uh-huh. And everyone was just talking about, oh, it's got the RAM, it's got this, it's like this Nintendo, what Nintendo don't, whatever it is. Yep. Sega
Sony,
does. So
yeah.
Sega does. Sorry. My God, this is, it's deeply rooted, but it's scrambled like fried eggs. Sega does what Nintendo don't.
Yes.
That one slogan alone, plus the hyper-aggressive like commercials that came out around the time saying, like, you can't do this. Mario can't run. Sonic can run quicker than him. You're like, but it must run faster, therefore it's a better game.
That was like kind of... They had the whole, like, you know, the 32-bit console back then, and that was the marketing back then. If you go back and watch it, it's literally them holding up Sonic and him being all full of attitude. And being like, well, Mario's just a plumber. He can't do this.
It is.
And then Sonic runs really fast.
Ridiculous.
I mean, Sonic's brilliant, so he worked on me. He's better than Mario. But the state that the...
It's just holding up Mario going, go. A load of this dork.
It's literally
so close to that.
So there's a lot of that. And there's a lot of like hyperinflation, especially the magazine ads back then. Were like really over the top. The one that I started to think of was Killzone 2 when Sony showed off Killzone 2.
I remember that one. I was old enough to remember that one. So there we go.
It was just like, that was a full on, here's a CG cutscene that we've pre-rendered and we're going to pretend it's gameplay. Mm-hmm. And like, that was just ridiculous. I mean, I obviously did a whole list on these like the other week, but you can go and like check that out and stuff. But the things like the Xbox One's Kinect reveal not being real, being staged, and just stuff like that.
Watch Dogs and their verticals.
I was going to say, my most memorable one is Watch Dogs, because I remember that was like the coming of the next generation and everything was going to be amazing. This is going to be the norm for games of this generation. And then when it came out, it was like, well, it wasn't. But I remember being completely enthralled and engrossed by those demos that Ubisoft showed first at E3, and then they came back a year later and they showed off all the different stuff that you can do. And it's completely wild that we keep on letting it happen, because I even when I know that this is in the back of my mind, Ubisoft turned up to E3 the year later and did Ghost Recon Wildlands and showed off this amazing kind of organic world where people would react to your guerrilla warfare. And then the game came out and it was the most cookie cutter third person tactical FPS, third person shooter ever.
A game that mercenaries had done better,
exactly.
The mercenaries.
Yeah. Great game.
A deep cut. I remember in the lead up to Wildlands coming out, I remember you still had hope.
Yep.
And I saw it in your eyes and I was like, no, it's not going to be
I
that.
I love Tom Clancy games.
I mean, love them too.
I don't want to pick on Ubisoft too much, but even though I love Rainbow Six Siege, if you go back and look at the first demo for Siege, what they were showing there was a much more highly stylized, like, kind of thing. And we've talked at length before about that YouTuber, is it Crow B Cat, who does the compilations of like
amazing E3. YouTuber, actually. Amazing.
And he did one of all the Ubisoft downgrades, and the one for Siege is really noticeable because in that first E3 demo, you have people kind of rappelling down helicopters, and like there's that cliche, like Ubisoft, like, oh, we're all serious tactical competitive gamers.
Yeah. And it was nothing.
Yeah, and then all the features that they had in it, like people being able to run outside for a long period of time and then not be seen, and then the way that the terrain would destroy and stuff like that. None of that was there in the game. None of the lighting effects were there. You actually look at Rainbow Six Siege, it's a pretty decent looking game, but it's nothing like they promised when it first was unreal.
There's two examples that I remember being as big ones for me personally, and one was Bioshock Infinite. When that was announced way back in the day, like, I'm a huge Bioshock fan, like, and I've read the books, I've got all the art books and stuff like that. I got really into the design process. So when I knew that Bioshock Infinite was coming out and they released that, what they considered to be a demo of it.
Oh, I remember
with
that
the crows
one.
And walking into the bar and then being there. I was like, okay, this game literally might as well just be a Hoover for my credit card, because I will pay anything to have this.
Yeah.
And then when it came out, I was left feeling quite underwhelmed, because all of the things that they
changed so much in that game.
And I do believe that we need to be clear on what the term promise is, because it's not actually like Mr. EA or Mr. Ubisoft, don't know if they're married and have kids, like they come out and them saying like, this is going to be in this game. It's what they show to the world that we're talking about, like a trailer, an advert, things like that. They are promises in a sense, because they give you an expectation of what the game will be when it's
finished. They always have that thing at the bottom where it's like not indicative of the final product, and it's like okay,
but they used to have that. They used to just run with it, and then if anyone called them on it, they'd be like, okay, actually, guys, it's not the official one.
But what I just thought of then was Metal Gear Solid 2. Like that, the entire point of that game is misdirection,
and it sold you on the fact that it was going to be Snake.
Yeah, and you almost couldn't get away with that today, I don't think. Mm. And it's just like that whole thing with Metal Gear 2. The entire marketing campaign was that you're going to play as Snake, and then actually you're playing as Raiden, and that factored into the story and how we take like different legends for granted and whatever.
Well,
but still,
it's interesting that you said misdirection and the word legend, because that was my second one, which is Brutal Legend.
Oh God!
Right, this is the thing.
That's painful.
Right, Brutal Legend is not a bad game.
It's fine. It is the best opening ever.
Exactly, and it sold itself as being basically what I would consider to be Psychonauts meets heavy metal.
Yeah, I was like Heavy Metal God of War.
That's how I thought it was going to be, and then it turned into a Command and Conquer clone that was just inferior.
I was completely shocked. I was like, I remember like really enjoying the opening. I was like, wait, what's this RTS stuff going on right now?
You know the bit when you get like you do your first battle in that, and you end it, and you go, that was a nice distraction. And then you're like, oh wait, I've got a second
more
unit.
Of these.
Oh, I've got a third unit. This is the game now, isn't it?
Yeah. That was a really weird thing, because they didn't show off the reality of what the majority of that game was until right next to launch. Like, if you were keeping up with all the gameplay videos, eventually they started showing off the RTS stuff, but it wasn't part of the overall reveals at the big exhibitions.
The fact that the entire demo that they released was solely finished at the point where the RTS began, I felt, was a huge indicator.
Totally.
That
is a weirdly deceiving thing. It's like, look at this thing you're buying into. The demo ends before you get to you do the opening hack and slash bit and the racing bit and the boss battle, and then that's it.
That's an interesting thing as well, because remember when demos were a thing? Demos.
Yeah.
And we used to have, there's a really good Funhouse series called Demo Discs that they used to do, where they just get all the discs you get in old magazines and play them. It's really funny.
I have hundreds of those. If you wanted to bring them in and play them with you.
There was a thing that was really interesting, because I used to love playing demos. I thought they were a really valuable thing for consumers to have, to be able to get a grip to whether they wanted to try a game out. For instance, I probably wouldn't have gotten the first Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter if I hadn't been able to play the demo online with people. And then there was a stat that came out, probably would have been around 2010, 2011, where they said that games that bring out demos have less people actually buy the finished product.
Because they feel like they've already
that's so weird to me, because I think if you're confident in your product, you want to share it with people and then give them a taster of what's to come. I mean, we have betas, we still have those, but it's not the same as a finished product that you can taste and get a feel for a game.
Yeah.
I mean, so what's actually worth more in that case? Mm. Is it worth more to make a sale and make somebody unhappy with the final product, or to show somebody early doors and not receive that sale just by saying, look, you didn't like it, that's fine, it's not for you sort of thing, it's for the people I would say if it was an ethical thing, we'd all say, put the demo out and let people decide for themselves. But if you're looking at it from a corporate greed, keep it shtum.
Yeah.
Not Quiet Man shtum, because that bombed because there was no PR to that whatsoever, but still.
Yeah, not the Quiet Man.
Yeah.
But that's another thing. It's like an extension of that sort of like hook, line, and sinker mentality, to be cynical about it. Like, obviously, they want to show you something, get you hooked in by day one. It's why the reviews policies changed like this generation. Like, you saw companies like Bethesda. Yeah, like, just restrict like access to reviews until the day of launch.
Just so that we're clear on this, if ever anyone has accused us of any sort of like finagling with Bethesda, it's just the fact that we don't even get our review copies until the day of launch, and we're expected to have reviews out.
That's a good way to segue actually into influencer culture.
Yeah.
And talking about kind of how outlets as well, because it was a thing back in the day. You'll be aware of this as well. It's like video game publishers reached out to outlets. You have it like the days of like the Game Informer exclusive previews. Obviously, you still have
that,
the covers and stuff, but it's not as prevalent across the industry. It's because they're finding that reaching out to, you know, individual YouTubers who potentially aren't as critical and aren't approaching the topic with the same kind of thoroughness or objectivity, if you want to call it that, as an outlet would do. And that's really interesting as well, because, you know, that in itself plays into the whole mystique of creating a vision of your product that is ostensibly this perfect thing. And then if you're... It's very frustrating. And I'm sure most people out there probably agree that reviewing outlets should be able to get their hands on it as well, because those are the critical, you know, that's where you find the actual consensus.
There are lots of claims, especially within our industry, about people being paid off. Like YouTube has that feature where you have to say whether or not you include paid promotion. And then it came out recently that a lot of people actually will still put out stuff and not tick that box that says that, which is completely lying to the fans, by the way. And we can't do that, because we are... we are a company that if it got sold, it could take the entire company. It isn't just one person in the basement. This would absolutely
do. You remember what happened to Machinima? Yeah. I mean, it was kind of personal because Machinima have like completely, they've been bought and like all the YouTube videos are taken down. But back when the Xbox One came out, it turned out that they were pushing all their content creators to push the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 coverage and stuff. And it's, that's another interesting thing as well. And I guess it's how it all meshes together to create a very annoying thing.
It goes down to the point where it's not just the people at the tops, the publishers, who are lying to get their games out there or false advertising. It is the people they use as the means to channel that to their directly.
What you were saying about the value of marketing and the value of advertising and like the general, I love the word optics, I keep using it all the time, like the general perception of a title or a franchise or a brand or whatever, the optics around a certain game. And like something like Anthem, like I've been playing that most of the weekend, like alongside Resi 2, and like it's a quick little thing you mentioned about like people feeling like they had their satisfaction based on the demo. Like, I totally feel like I've played the majority of Anthem based on those few hours. But in terms of, like, the optics of a certain game, like, the value of branding the value of marketing, someone like Rockstar don't even bother, like, until they are completely ready and something's about to drop and they'll go, okay, GTA 5 is real in, like, June and it's out in October.
They had possibly, and I would argue that it might be one of the most perfect media pitches for Red Dead Redemption 2 last year, because everyone knows what Red Dead Redemption is about. By this time, people had either played the original or there was enough swell about the announcement of Red Dead Redemption 2 that people were just like, okay, I get that it's going to be a Western, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The fact that they put their entire marketing pitch behind, these are the things you can do when you're not doing the amazing story. It was like, is it when Cartman buys the theme park in South Park and he says you can't come in, and it creates a generated buzz of people saying, but I want to know more. Mm-hmm. It was like that, but basically the Rockstar going, yeah, you can play cards if you want, if you don't want to take on the massive story that we made.
It's back. Like,
and it's like, but can we see more about the story? Oh, yeah, sure. But let me first show you about horse racing. And it's like,
I want to buy this game so badly.
And it intimates confidence in their own product. And obviously, Rockstar have plenty of pedigree. We know the amount of money that they throw into their projects.
GTA 5 is still in the top 10.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think maybe if you're looking at a Ubisoft or an EA, I mean, there are still oodles and oodles of money floating around those projects.
Oh, yeah.
But to say that either of them have the same pedigree or... Let's face it, it's not as though whenever Ubisoft release a game, it is an event. You know, whenever Rockstar release a game, it is an event.
Yes.
Whenever... You know,
I think like a new Assassin's Creed is still
kind of I would say so, but it's not to the same level where Ubisoft would be confident enough to go, oh yeah, it's Assassin's Creed, we don't need to show you why you should play it. Whereas if it's Red Dead or GTA or even a new Bully, for instance, Rockstar can just go, yeah, you know what it is,
true,
get it.
Well, the interesting thing as well is,
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another clarification we need to make is that not all advertising is bad. That is one of the main ways to sell your game. If you don't, then your game will get buried. Like, independent developers struggle so much to get their game on anyone's radar that it's, you know, it's their biggest challenge. But another perfect example of a good advertising campaign has been the Resident Evil 2 remake one. They've done their trailers, they've done that, but the one-shot demo was a fantastic idea that fits thematically into the world of Resident Evil. You get one shot to get away, and when you're done, you're dead.
And that thing's sales speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, it's already, I think, oversold half of Resident Evil 7's lifetime sales in its first week.
It was 3 million, wasn't it?
And
Resident Evil 7 did 4 million across 2 years.
Right. So, that's the thing, but that would counter the idea that demos don't result in sales, because clearly people played the demo and went, I want more.
Aha, I have a theory for this. Are the 90s very, and you know, we have the nostalgia pendulum. We can get into Google that term if you want to. You know, we're kind of in the midst of like every 20 years or so, we kind of look back.
Resurgence
of like 90s and 80s culture is really in right now.
Yes.
Not unsurprising.
Resident
Evil, the single player demo, that I think the reason why people will be compelled to buy that is because it is a linear narrative experience that lasts for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then once it's done, it's done. Whereas potentially, if you have a multiplayer demo that you can play whenever you want, and there are constantly mm-hmm. people in that multiplayer demo, which was the case back in like the days of the Xbox 360 mm-hmm. and PS3,
yeah.
potentially people feel as though, oh, it's just a free outlet to play this certain thing. Whereas if you are offering a linear experience that you can only play for 30 minutes, that is going to encourage people to buy more. And it's not as if the demo didn't hammer you at the end of it being like, oh, buy the game now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
plus,
what I mean?
Chances are, I mean, like, when I was playing the one-shot demo, like, chances are when you're playing that, you're going to get cut off mid-fight or mid-exploration.
I literally picked up the shotgun and I was like, yes.
And then it's like,
buy the game.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah. And it's like, weirdly, that, like, because obviously it's dynamic and they don't know exactly when that cutoff's going to come. But like, for a lot of people, it probably worked, like, in the middle of something that you just want to continue. And I thought that worked extremely well. Because I was going to say, in terms of, like, overall, like, what do you guys think influences your purchases? Like, is it just a cool, like, aesthetic? Do you tend to read reviews? Because it's obviously going to be a product of what we do. Mm-hmm. But, I'll kind of just go off, I don't know, like, a couple of bits of gameplay, some screenshots.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I think for me, one of my biggest influencing factors for buying a new game tends to be, because games are a way of keeping in touch with people as well, let's not forget. So if there's a game that I know my friends are going to get, I might not even be particularly enthused by it, but I'll probably end up getting it because I want to play it with them. I'm very specific with my gaming taste as well. So if Marvel turned around tomorrow and announced a Captain America game or something, it's being done by Insomniac. I know I'm there. They have me. Take me now.
Yes.
So it's that sort of stuff as well. I would say that if there is a series or franchise that I'm not particularly keen on, I will kind of seek out reviews. But one thing that I don't value at all is the whole influencer culture. I just don't buy it. I don't care about a diehard mega fan on YouTube blurting on about how much he loves this certain thing, because at the end of the day, that opinion, it means nothing to me.
Just to quickly address that though, like, that's one of the things to talk about before in terms of the way that, like, you know, massive companies can pay for influencer culture or can pay for a whole bunch of tastemakers, whatever word they want to call them, to sponsor their games. Like, yes, if you hire like 50 Mortal Kombat fans and send them to the Mortal Kombat event, they'll say nice things about Mortal Kombat. And like, that's the thing that hardly ever gets addressed, kind of thing. But if you're also a huge Mortal Kombat fan, they'll delve into the mechanics and there'll be a certain type of coverage that only they'll do that the average like IGN reviewer, just for example, might not do. For example, Resident Evil 2's review, just to mention the IGN one, they didn't seem like they went through the whole thing. They only did one quarter of it by the sounds of it.
Yes.
And that obviously had a knock-on effect for both the fans and them in terms of, you know, what a review's supposed to give them.
I think that it's a double-edged sword using the influencer things, because I know that we've been invited to events and it's very, very hard to...
We turned down a rally course.
Yeah, and it's, but at the same time, we'll use Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite as a good example of this. They invited loads and loads of professional players of both Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, like top-tier gamers, especially within the Marvel vs. Capcom Combat roster.
There you go.
Yes.
And they
mirrored into the VO studio.
Yeah, yeah, right. And they flew them all out and they set them down and they let them play with like a dev demo. Mm-hmm. And they walked away from that saying, this is one of the best things I've played in ages. This is a true continuation of the Marvel vs. Capcom franchise. Mm-hmm. Then as the reviews came out and everyone was just like, no, it's not. Like, what are you on about? Like, what game were you playing? Like, they changed so much about this mechanically. And then they came out afterwards saying, yeah, actually, I guess when you're flown out there and paid for, all expenses paid, and you get all that stuff done and everything's free and everyone's smiling, you do kind of just buy into it. And it's like, but you told everyone to buy this game. And I worry that it would happen very easily to anyone put in that position.
That's obviously what they want. Like, in terms of the EA's, the Activision's or whatever, they want a controlled message. That's the heart of all the PR stuff, is controlling the message to ensure that, like, certain people go out. And then you restrict the review side of it. So you've only got, and assumedly, like, to take it to its logical endpoint, you've got a whole bunch of influencers that already love the product being given access to a certain thing. They say a whole bunch of nice things, and you restrict the review copies to the wider critical reception so that that message is controlled. And that's, for the most part, where we are now, which is the zenith of everything across the last couple of generations.
I mean, I personally struggle to find out about new games without ending up stumbling across a massive fanboys channel, which will tell me so much about it that I feel like I'm almost put off by it, or I need to have played this game or that game. So it's almost... It's very hard to change your tastes once you're in there, but I always try. I'm always looking at the beginning of each month. I sit down, have a look at what games are being released across the platforms. I try my best to monitor Steam, but it is impossible with the amount of stuff that gets added to
it's
that.
The Epic Games Store now, mate.
And it's Epic Games as well. And it's just like, you sit there going, like, okay, what out of this do I want to play? And then I have to say to myself, okay, if I'm going to play it, is it going to be a review for the channel or is it personal? If it's either that, when am I going to find the time?
There's that, like, time sync side of it.
And it mounts a massive... I've still got to play Kingdom Hearts 3. I haven't even, like, had a chance to sit down with that. But
you need to finish Red Dead Redemption 2, mate.
Yeah, exactly. There's stuff like that. Like, it's just... It's impossible to stay on top of it.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I just bought... in terms of, like, you know, buying something... I don't know if you guys have ever impulse bought, like, something or whatever, but, like,
All the time.
So I just got a Hong Kong Massacre, which is, like, it looks like a Hotline Miami meets Stranglehold.
Yeah.
And that should have been my dream game. It turns out that it's not as tight as I'd like it to be. But I just was literally went straight off. Like, you know, when you load something up on the PlayStation Store and it starts to play the gameplay behind it, I was like, that looks perfect. Yeah. And I'd already heard about it. And I just sort of looked at the art style. I was like, yep, cool, £15.
I make a point of not buying anything on the PS Store for that exact reason.
Right.
Like, usually what I do is I get very anxious about spending money as it is. Yeah. So, like, I feel guilty out there. Like, oh, I've just spent my money. It's like, but brain, you earn that money. It's like, well... Yeah, but
this could be food.
Exactly. And so typically what I'll do is I'll try and just, you know, look at different places and try and make sure this is actually the thing for me. And usually I'll chicken out of it at the end of the day. But what I'm finding at the moment is that I'm going back and playing games that released like 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah. Like I bought Sniper 2? Elite. Yeah, Battlefront 2. I've been getting back into that recently.
You're about to say Sniper Elite. It's a fantastic game.
Yeah, Sniper Elite is phenomenal.
Sniper Elite, because like I love stealth games. I love historic games. And then that thing just I completely didn't care about when it came out. But now that I've gone back to it and the price has come down, like, well, this is actually very interesting. And where was the market in for that? Where is the target in for that? It's interesting, isn't it?
That's such a thing, because the longer you wait, are you better off always waiting? Because you can avoid the hype bubble and you can get the complete consensus critically, commercially, everything if you just wait.
Mm. All I'll say is that Gold Edition, when you wait for the DLC to be added,
you get
everything for half the price. Like, I mean, I'm happy to sit on some games until that point hits. Like, there are some games that I wouldn't like. Destiny right now, like, I played a bit of it back in the day, but now even with all of the DLC package, the consumer base is winding down on that.
It's had a bit of a surge since Bungie split from Activision. It seems like it's actually got its soul back,
but I've only just for example bought in September I bought Superhot. How long has that game been out?
And then
I get to experience it again and no one's talking about it and it's just chill and I go, this is brilliant. Amazing.
Yeah. Because the thing is, like, I mean, me and Josh we always talk about this. Whenever a new Call of Duty comes out, like, that's an event game.
Yeah.
And it's like you've got all the branding, you've got like, oh, Monster Energy, you can get double XP weekend, and there's all this horrible like, you know, gamer type stuff. But part of me totally likes getting lost in that stuff. It's like both sides of the coin.
I was about to say, you say horrible, but I see that as just being the same as any other sort of sporting event. Like, if you watch NFL, if you're involved in like football and stuff like that, you know the build up to the preseason is almost itself a main event sort of thing.
Yeah, it's almost like the opening day of the Premier League when Call of Duty comes out, because that's when everything flushes kind of comes in at the start of, and it's
people get hurt afterwards and angry.
And exactly. And it's interesting because I've constantly wrestled to and fro with Call of Duty in particular. Like, I remember when that was the thing at school and everyone was playing that, I tried not to get sucked into it because I thought, I have an inbuilt hipster complex I find in my brain where if anything is super popular, I get very suspicious of it. But then, like, every now and then, I feel the call of Call of Duty. Yeah. I feel the call of Duty, if you will.
Yeah. And run to the console.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's almost a case of, like, that that brand has so much recognizability mm-hmm. and so much pull, no matter to what generation you're from, you'll have a memory of Call of Duty mm-hmm. that was probably positive, and they're able to cash in on that reliably mm-hmm. every single year. Even if Call of Duty World War II, that when that released, it was disastrous. Like the whole multiplayer was broken on PlayStation for weeks.
Can't forget that installment even happened.
It's really
But what's interesting is, like you were saying about like tuning into it at certain times. Mm. There definitely seems to be like whatever your first Call of Duty game is, you'll defend that to the death. Like I know people who still go up to me and say like Ghosts was the best one. I'm like, I'm sorry, bro.
No one's saying that, surely.
Yeah, apparently so. I mean, I was way back in the day on the original Call of Duty.
Me too, mate.
I was actually going to raise a point here.
Go on.
And how multiplayer games keep their communities going and how that marketing affects things. Like with stuff with Overwatch and Siege and to a degree Battlefront 2 now
as well.
And Rocket League. They have like loads of different strategies at play to make it work. So for Overwatch, it's the seasonal events to try and get people in. With Siege, they try and really bank on the competitive nature of the game because like in a few months' time, it's the Invitational. And then I feel as though sometimes what you get with these multiplayer games is you get developers constantly tweaking things about the multiplayer to get people to come back and visit repeatedly, even if it doesn't need any tweaking. Like you could probably have said that the build of Overwatch a year and a half ago, that was perfectly balanced and fine, but they're constantly tweaking it. And every time there's a tweak, you go, oh, I have to go check it out now. And that's really interesting.
But it's interesting because it's when you get your core base involved in tournament schemes and can turn it into a competitive like league, as it were, you've hit that golden spot because it's people actively taking your game and gamifying it in itself.
Yeah.
You can get it wrong, though,
absolutely.
As with Street Fighter V. Do you remember when they put all of the adverts on the thing for, what was it, 2 weeks to advertise that there was going to be a Street Fighter V? They saw a player dip because of that.
Because just looked horrific. That was just like... And they did it so egregiously where it was like, instead of a Kuma symbol, it's a giant tournament logo or
but
like
it's, but it's advertising that has gone completely off the rails.
So, to bring it full circle, like, I mean, in terms of you saying, like, you know, obviously, like, there's a way to monetize a community, but it has to be done with a level of respect and appreciation, which that level of respect usually isn't there during the hype bubble window, the initial launch window. That tends to be the time when review copies are held back.
Yeah.
And it's just like, let's just coast on the hype as much as possible and we'll figure out a way to pay people back respectfully later on, hence Battlefront 2.
Yeah, but that's the thing as well. It's like we're no longer seeing the days of where marketing would just be at launch. We're now seeing it at a constant level. Games that are becoming platforms in themselves and they constantly have to reach out to people to increase their player base. I mean, crikey, you don't need to repeat just how much multiplayer games they have. The spike at the beginning and the massive decline where, and it's only recently we're seeing exceptions to that rule where player bases are resurging, and you know there are partial reasons for that, like DLC community support and other ways, but I think that's a really interesting thing to draw upon because it's like we have that initial flux. And then now we're seeing recently PR developed to get people to actually stay invested in the thing they've already got.
And like hopefully a lot of the, like I don't know if you'll see a massive shift in video game advertising, like respecting what a game's going to look like in the long run. Because even something like Arkham Knight was just like, hey, buy our season pass. And it was like, what's going to be in it? I don't know, like six
Batmobiles.
Things. Like fans had to actually ask Rocksteady to be like, what's actually going to be in this pass?
I actually made a petition about that.
Yes, you did.
Finish that.
It was just that idea that like, they need to respect the long haul. If you're going to design games that are going to be platforms going to last a long time, then you can't necessarily cash in because people are going to be playing them for long enough.
And it's interesting enough that you mentioned Arkham Knight, even though Spider-Man also fell foul to the same thing because that season pass had details that wasn't announced, but that is a great game that was basically allowed something that was potentially not as great advertising to be like, just buy these three mystery packs, go on, give us some more money.
You know
what I mean? Like it affects even the biggest game. Any platform can be monetized. The hardest thing is mobilizing your player base.
I think, I mean, because me and you did that video on like why sort of corporate greed is like essentially not, well, I retitled it as in terms of it dying. Like it seems like there are some big seismic, I don't know, retaliations against stuff like the Battlefront 2, like, you know, the loot pass and stuff and the way that, the loot boxes and stuff. You know, and then the whole thing with Bungie like separating from Activision. It kind of seems like there's a bit of a change in the way that things are advertised and monetized. And so I guess going forward, hopefully that'll be the case. And I wrote down here about crowdfunding. And independent publishers, and you can get away from the corporate mentality as much. And so I don't know if that'll be the case next time.
And then you have cases so many other where, stuff. Like, what was that game where they've got all the celebrities in it, and like they still haven't?
The space thing. Oh, it's the biggest thing.
Yeah,
they've
got loads of like millions and millions invested in it. Star Citizen, is that what it's called?
Star Citizen.
Yeah. And like that's not coming out. And then there was whole stuff coming on about the Steam early access stuff, and kind of reconciling now. several years after they really introduced the early access stuff, how has that affected Steam as a platform? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting.
I think going into the next generation, like obviously we're a more interconnected gamer community than ever. Mm-hmm. And so like it's depending on how they take advantage of that stuff going forward, like for better or worse. But something like Star Citizen, like, yeah, there's even a potentially corporate mentality to the way that thing's been put together, even though it's a big Kickstarter project. And it's the same way that you can look at influencers and taste makers and go like, oh, well, they're not corporate, they're not X website, but then they can still fall foul to the, like, you know, the wrong thing.
I guess the biggest advice that I could give to anyone out there who is just a bit unsure if they were being taken advantage of is just really sit back and think about it. Us sitting here telling you to think about it is also us trying to influence you in a way. Just step away from the game industry and realize what you want to do.
Also watch our Kingdom Hearts review.
Yeah, I
guess. Also watch all our content.
Also buy my t-shirt.
Yeah, also buy a shirt.
Do you see what I mean? It is a horrible game that we all play it.
I say we introduce subliminal advertising in our videos from now on. So you should be there talking about and number five, buy Jules' shirt. Yeah.
Well, at least it's not as bad as the superliminal from The Simpsons. Join the Navy!
Not to worry. So yes, you guys, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching on the video side, or you can find us on social media if you're on any of the audio platforms. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello and goodbye.
And joined by Jules Gill.
Follow me at RetroJ with a zero over on Twitter.
Yeah, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Also, bye.
Bye.
Ewan ruins things.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.